Hi, my name is Carol, and I am an Al-Anon member from Fort Myers, Florida, who is trying so hard to be happy, joyous, and free one day at a time. When I speak, I always bring some cards in case my mind goes blank, and I always bring some tissues in case God touches my heart, because sometimes it comes out in my eyes. Detachment, love, and forgiveness. So for the last month, after I was invited to speak on this topic, I've been reading and rereading the chapter in How Al-Anon Works, and just, you know, thinking, why God, why detachment, why love and forgiveness? And I've learned a lot about those three tools that we have given to us. But I took the detachment, love, and forgiveness, the DLF, daylight fear. So detachment, love, and forgiveness are three tools that I use for my daytime fear or daylight fear. But then I thought, what about nighttime fear? See, I'm somebody who's got to have these associations so I can remember things. So then I went to nighttime fears, NTF, and I thought, I finally came up after doing some searching. Because then when I wake up in the middle of the night and I have these panic attacks and these fears, I can't detach from them because they are bigger than life. And I can't, you know, I can't love myself and forgive what's going on when I wake up with these dreams. But I thought, I can nurture myself. I can use any tool that we have in this program to help me get through it. And I can have faith that my Al-Anon program is going to work for me. So a little bit about me. I was born in Wisconsin and raised in a small town on Lake Michigan. I thought it was a normal family. We lived with my grandparents. And I had a brother, and my parents didn't drink, so I really didn't know anything about the family disease of alcoholism. I knew that, you know, there were family members that had a drink, and I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to it. And sometimes they were fun when they drank too much, and sometimes they went to sleep. So I went about my merry way, but there were so many things in my life that didn't make sense. And I was one of those children that wanted to know. I wanted to make sense out of things that didn't make sense. And I had a mouth on me that would just ask questions. Well, why did you do that? That didn't make sense. And when I was 14, I said something, which I don't remember what I said, but my grandmother that was living with us got mad at me. Because I probably called it like it was. And she didn't speak to me for almost a year. And here I was a child. But what I learned was, well, if you get angry at somebody, if you do something wrong, don't speak. You know, you don't talk to them. You just shun them. And that's what I learned. I don't know that situation was ever resolved. My grandmother... Since being in Al-Anon, I learned that she was an untreated Al-Anon, and she was a very bitter, angry woman, and that's what I grew up with. But I wanted out of that house. I didn't know why. I just wanted out, and I saw, you know, from the time I realized that boys were there, I was interested in boys, the other sex. So a week after I turned 20, because I always had a plan, Plan A and Plan B, but I really forced Plan A. But I married my high school sweetheart, although he went to a different high school. We got married, moved 2,000 miles away so I could get away from home. And that found me in Arizona. And there I worked very hard because my husband was going to school, and he got his PhD and I got my PhD. It was an official degree that, you know, a piece of paper that I had framed, putting hubby through. I did it. I did it. And of course, I didn't know anything about alcoholism. And all I knew is that what I grew up with. Because what you live with, you learn. And what you learn, you practice. And what you practice, you become. And so I just kept trying to practice what I had learned. We had a child that was not planned, And there was a lot of emotional abuse throughout that marriage. We were married 9 years, but there was also a lot of physical abuse. So I did divorce. Well, we moved to Minneapolis. I move around a lot. Moved to Minneapolis, and we were there a year, and then we moved to Cincinnati. And that Cincinnati is where I spent most of my life. After we had reached all our goals, he started having another goal. And we soon divorced. And then I didn't know how to live without a man. I didn't know anything about this family disease. All I knew was what I had learned growing up. So I immediately went out looking for another Mr. Right. And I found him. I found him in the bar. And now you see, you got to understand, my first husband was short, just a few inches taller than I was, and he was blonde. So I went, wanted somebody the opposite. I looked, found somebody who was tall. I am in the bar, the tallest person I could, and somebody who had dark hair. He was opposite. And then I'd connect. And I got him. And in his story, he talks about, you know, I said, I wanted a free lunch. And he says, well, I have been paying ever since. And he has his own story to tell. But, you know, here we were. I had one child, and it came my second marriage. And along came two more children, two more sons. And life was crazy. It just kept getting crazy. This is a progressive disease, not only mentally, spiritually, and physically. And it wasn't until I became so physically ill, about 15 years into this marriage, that I had to seek help. I knew about Al-Anon. I had people, I'd hear about it from time to time, but it was, well, that's not for me. Maybe I can try this. Maybe I can try that. So I did. Finally, as a last resort, I got to Al-Anon. I was so ready when I walked in those doors. And I stayed. I haven't found it necessary to miss a meeting ever since then. And then I started hearing all these things, about how to deal with the alcoholic, the diffusers that we call them, to whatever you say. You could be right. And those worked for a while. And then he caught on, and it didn't work anymore. But I would go to my meetings, and I would hear things that were shared, and I would think, okay, how do you detach? Detach, you know. How do you accept? How do I do that? I was reading in How Al-Anon Works. It says that at first, you know, we don't have to detach perfectly. And there were ways that I felt cornered in my house with him. And I became aware of the present situation. So I learned to change some of my patterns that I wouldn't be cornered and caught and not be able to physically detach. I would keep car keys around so that I could physically walk out if I had to. That was all I knew, what to do to survive the situation. It worked for a while, and then I heard this detach with love. Well, I still didn't really get that concept either, because there wasn't a lot of love. And then how to forgive. Well, after I was in program about 5 years, my youngest son started drinking. He was 15 then, and he started drinking. And then things became different. My husband had stopped drinking after I was in 2 years because I made an ultimatum that he needed to stop drinking because I couldn't live that way anymore. I started caring more about me than I did about the relationship. So he stopped drinking, but he didn't go to meetings. And after 5 years in the program, my son started drinking, and things got crazy. And then he started using drugs, and things got crazy. And that's when I learned there was a difference between being married to an alcoholic, being the grandchild of an alcoholic, being the sister of an alcoholic, and being a parent of an alcoholic. Everything was different then. And I was then able to separate the disease from the person. I was able to detach from the disease and not the person. I was able to love the person and hate the disease. I was able to forgive the actions that were that came as a result from the drinking. And it went to, with my children, my father especially. My father had disowned me. He had, he had had an affair with my mom's best friend while they were married, and so he left, and I mean, it's just crazy stuff. It didn't make sense. Crazy stuff. But anyway, so when I got married to my husband, my dad disowned me, and it was 7 years before I had some contact with my father again. And, you know, I never had a close relationship with him, but I was able, it took many years, able to finally go to my father and see him for the person that God saw in him, and to be able to love him and forgive him for what he did, and so that we had several years together where, you know, he would say, I love you, and I could say, I love you. And the last thing that we said to each other when he passed away was, I love you. I didn't have that with my mother, because my mother was also an untreated Al-Anon person. And there was just a lot of anger and bitterness with my mother when she passed away. The I want to read a couple of quotes here. From How Al-Anon Works. When we detach with love, we accept others exactly as they are. So there came the acceptance. You know, if I can detach. You see, when I first came in, my daughter was getting married, and I didn't think the marriage was supposed to be happening. This was not right. You know, she was 20 years old. She shouldn't be getting married yet. And I didn't know how to accept it. But, you know, what do I know? They've been married 20 years, and you know, they're still very much in love, and what do I know what's right for them? Out of courage to change, it says, we must learn to love ourselves before we can truly love others. You know, that's what I learned. This all begins here inside of me. To be able to forgive, to be able to love anyone else, I have to love myself. So then I had to go back and start forgiving myself, loving myself for all the mistakes that I made in my relationships, in my marriages, in my growing up years. And when I could do that, then I could pass it on. I could practice these principles in all my affairs, and I could separate the disease from the person. I could learn to detach, and I could love the person for who they were, for the person that God wanted them to be. There are sometimes that some of the experiences that I've had, I had so much guilt, and I just couldn't forgive myself. And that's where my higher power, you know, we say he does for you what you can't do for yourself. When my son was... this was my first son. When he was in fifth grade, the practice at the school was giving away T-shirts to all the students. They had the year that they would graduate from high school, and they had all the students' names in the years. So, but I loaned that T-shirt to somebody else who wanted a copy of it, you know, wanted to see what it was like. Well, it disappeared. And my son never forgot that it was, you know, I trusted somebody else. So this T-shirt disappeared. I couldn't find it. You know, I went through all the boxes, all the stuff at school, and I could not find this T-shirt. And it was gone. And this was, I'm not sure how many years later, 10 years later, quite a long time. But he was still talking about this. Remember, Mom, you lost that T-shirt for me? I mean, now he's out of high school. You know, it hadn't been longer. And, he couldn't let go. I couldn't let go. So it was at Christmas time. I was at a warehouse where they were selling things, and they had printed T-shirts. And here in this bin, we were searching through these bins, T-shirts for 50 cents, you know. Here were two T-shirts from that class in 1997. And I was like, oh, my God, this is just unbelievable. Here they were. And they were both extra large. Because, you see, when he was in fifth grade, I would have gotten him a medium. Well, he wouldn't have been able to wear it by the time he graduated from high school. No way. So I bought these T-shirts. I didn't say anything to him about it. And I wrapped them up and gave them to him for Christmas. And he had tears in his eyes. And it was just such a neat thing. So there, God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. God forgave me for what the mistake that I had done. And to me, that was, you know, truly a miracle. And the interesting thing, the son had a child right after they got out of high school. And so, you know, here's my little granddaughter wearing this T-shirt for a nightshirt. And this T-shirt's still around, and, you know, that's a long time. I just saw it, I know, within the past year when we were up visiting him. But, you know, that's how the love and the forgiveness comes when God does for us what we can't do for ourselves. I just recently had an experience. My godmother, when she passed away, she had given me her diamond ring, which I'm wearing today. And it was just a couple of months ago. I'm very careless with things that are important to me, like money and jewelry. You know, it costs a lot of money. Anyways, I lost the ring. And I checked everywhere, you know, retraced my steps, and it had to have fallen out somewhere out of my purse. So I had prayed over the ring. I had given it to God. I had let it go, and I prayed that the person that found it enjoyed it. You know, and needed it, you know, went to good use. So it was about 2 months later, somebody brought me home, and I got out of the car, and I looked in the driveway, and I saw something shiny. And here was the ring. I had driven over this ring. It was upside down so that the diamonds were all okay. But the ring part of it was flattened. And I waited for a couple of months to go without it, to keep reminding myself that, you know, of one of my character defects. And just had it fixed and picked it up before we came to the convention. So when I was ready to let go, totally let go of that ring, then God provided, and there it was. And I have it again in my life. When it came to retirement age, we moved to Florida. And we moved there because our son got a job there, our youngest son. I mentioned, you know, our youngest son back when he was 15 started using and drinking. By the time he was 19, he found sobriety. And I'd like to say he's been sober ever since 2001, but he hasn't. He did have a slip, but he's now put together 8 years of sobriety. So we moved to Florida, and this was a whole new Al-Anon for me. I thought after 16 years of Al-Anon in Ohio, and, you know, I had a good program, and Al-Anon was Al-Anon wherever I went. Well, it wasn't, and it isn't. And Al-Anon in Florida, in Fort Myers, is very different from the Al-Anon I experienced in Ohio. And I started having some issues again. You know, I didn't have my friends. I was calling every day. Every day I call people in Ohio. I have my sponsor that I've had since I got into program. But it was different, and I felt alone, and things started. I started going to every meeting I could. You know, 6 days a week I was going to meetings. But, you know, things just were different. I didn't have a home. We had bought a condo. It was like living in an apartment. And I had this issue with people crossing my boundaries. The neighbor kept parking his car in front of our driveway, and I'd get angry. And so this one night, I said some stuff to him, you know, when he said, "Well, just come and let me know." And I said that I shouldn't have to do that. Anyways, this one night, we were going to a concert, and I went down get in the car, and while we were blocked in, we could not get out of our driveway. I was furious. I went running back upstairs, and I grabbed a, well, first I should say, I kind of got this idea because I took this problem to a meeting and heard, got solutions on it, and, you know, what other people had done. And I always listen to what other people do and say, I'll try things. So, and sometimes it's just what they want to do, not actually what they did do. But I went up, and I started yelling at my husband, and I said that I said, "They're parked there," and I grabbed a bar of soap, and I went down. I mean, this is, you know, 17 years in Al-Anon, and I'm, you know, and I went down and I soaped the windows. Now, I did not put the words I wanted to put on the windows. I remembered that. And he came running after me and he just said, "Stop, what are you doing?" I had a real Al-Anon slip. I had no control over what was going on. I was just so enraged by this person parking this car and blocking us in. And when he came and he yelled at me, it was like being slapped in the face, you know, being, oh, wow. I didn't realize what I was doing. I was, you know, so lost. What happened from that, he went and took care of it. We got the car moved. We went to this concert. I sat down in the concert next to some gentleman I did not know. I knew his wife, had met her. I did not know him, but we started talking. Usual question, where are you from? Make a long story short, he had had my mother for a teacher in third and fourth grade. And here we are, you know, he was from same Kenosha, Wisconsin. And, you know, I don't know how many years later this was. And here we were in Fort Myers, and he had had my mother. And the thing is, he said, my mother was one of his, you know, was his favorite teacher, was somebody that he had meant so much to him. And I got to hear stories about my mother that I didn't even know. And that was a miracle of God taking care of me. Learning to love, forgive, you know, and to detach. There are a lot of times, even today, you know, this convention, I have to detach. A lot of times, detach from myself because my mind gets to going. I have to get busy, pick up something to do, read, call on the phone. I'm a great talker on the phone. I took that tool to heart. And so anyways, I am glad to be here. Don't know what, you know, tomorrow will bring, but just for today, I've got this program. And I did learn that if someone doesn't have any boundaries, personal boundaries, they can't respect anybody else's. So if I don't, you know, when I didn't have any boundaries, I didn't know, I could not respect anybody else's, and likewise, somebody cannot respect my boundaries if they don't have any. Thank you very much for allowing me to share.
Thank you, Carol, for sharing. Our next speaker is Leary.
Everyone, I have the family disease of alcoholism, and my name is Leary. Hello. I just want to say I'm a very enthusiastic, active member of the Al-Anon family groups, and for that, I and everyone who knows me is very grateful. I am the granddaughter, niece, cousin, sister, and very frequently lover of people whose drinking, I believe, would qualify them for Alcoholics Anonymous. I feel kind of programmed in the disease of alcoholism from a very young age. The good news is, of course, we have a program, Al-Anon, that helps me learn strategies to deal with my disease differently. So I'm very grateful for that. And some of the behaviors that I have to work on a lot are that I get very enmeshed with other people, or historically have gotten very enmeshed with somebody else, where I'm a sponge for other people's emotions. I get obsessed about what they're doing, thinking, saying, feeling, that kind of thing. And so one of the obvious tools that has been really helpful to me in my program is the tool of detachment, to help me create some emotional separation from other people in my life. And I would like to say that I work my program so well that just never happens. But for me, I remain sensitive to other people's strong emotions, especially anger. I get anxious if somebody raises their voice. And it doesn't have to be somebody I know. I just have to be in the vicinity, for example. And then I appreciate some of the comments that Carol made. I have a really creative, busy mind. I mean, it's amazing what goes on in here. It used to be what went on in my mind was rehearsing what had happened and projecting what was going to happen. I don't rehearse the past very much anymore. I'm grateful for that. But I still can get caught up, and it's very seductive for me to get caught up in what's happening in the future. I'm involved in the Illinois State Convention for 2016. I got it all figured out. Just want to say. The good news is today I know that I can let go of the outcome, you know, and a lot better than I used to be able to. So maybe I'll just back up a little bit and say that my home group is Discovering Freedom Al-Anon Family Group. We meet in Belleville, Illinois on Monday nights at 7. If you're ever in the Metro East St. Louis area, please stop by and see us. It's a really fun group. So anyway, I continue to need to use detachment as a tool for me. And I'm grateful for our literature that says that detachment is a skill I practice, like any other skill in the program. If I want to learn how to pray, I practice praying. If I want to learn how to accept, I practice acceptance. If I want to learn how to detach, I practice detachment. That's what I do. And has already been said, I don't necessarily do it perfectly. I was telling, when I registered, I was telling somebody that when I learned, you know, it says in our literature, no is a complete sentence. Gosh, when I learned that, I was so excited. And I just said no all the time. Because I hadn't been able to say it at all. You know, I came to Al-Anon, and I didn't think of myself as a martyr. I didn't realize I was filled with self-pity. But I just knew that my life was just a nightmare, and that people seemed to walk over me all the time, and I didn't sort of know what to do about that. And then gradually over time, as I start practicing the program, I learned to start speaking up for myself. And so the first word I learned was no, and I loved it, and I used it all the time. And so I have made amends to the people I was involved with at the time for that, because I didn't do it very calmly or gracefully. I was pretty excited. So in the chapter in How Al-Anon Works that talks about detachment, love, and forgiveness, the chapter begins with a little blurb on boundaries. And that was a foreign concept to me when I came to Al-Anon. I mean, why would you want boundaries? I mean, isn't the goal, if you love someone, if you really love them, to just be completely attached to them? Like a parasite of some sort. So when I started learning boundaries, I thought the idea was to tell you where your boundaries were supposed to be, and so that you wouldn't do what I didn't want you to do. And I heard a newcomer at an Al-Anon meeting once say that he used this analogy that boundaries are like an invisible dog fence to keep me in the yard. Yeah, and when I heard that, I sort of thought, whoa, that's totally different than what I was thinking. I thought I had to inform you of the boundary, enforce the boundary, remind you of the boundary. But then a closer look at the literature, our literature does say, boundaries are when I decide what's appropriate and not appropriate for me, what I'm willing to do or not willing to do. What's unacceptable behavior to me? I have to figure that out. You know, it may not be unacceptable to anyone else in the room, and that doesn't matter. If it doesn't work for me, it doesn't work for me. And I have to find the courage, something inside of me, to be able to recognize that and then act on it. So that has been a process for me of learning kind of how to, you know, the steps, of course, are the main process for that for me, for figuring out who am I, what do I want to do, what's important to me, all of that kind of stuff. So one of the boundaries that I have learned to set is that I can do for others and be helpful and et cetera, as long as it's not at the expense of my own well-being. That's my rule for me. And so I work in a helping profession, and I don't know if anyone else has this experience, but what I observe of the coworkers where I work, anywhere I have ever worked, is that people in the healthcare professional especially don't take care of themselves. We don't eat, we don't take breaks, we don't go to the bathroom. You know, I mean, it's crazy. And so my Al-Anon program every day that I'm at work is I can do for others. That is my job, provided it's not at the expense of my own well-being. So I get to practice that a lot. I get to practice a lot of sort of like, can you just hang out for a couple minutes? I need to take a break. And I don't do that as perfectly as I'd like to all the time. But what has helped for me is I just, I pray every morning. I spend a lot of time with my higher power, and I try to turn the day over and see how it unfolds and try not to, you know. And I also have to remind myself at work, for me, I have to remind myself, like, to take breaks, drink water, go to the bathroom, eat your lunch. I mean, that sounds crazy, but that's kind of where I have to break it down to. So that's part of it. I think one of the things that helps me with the boundaries and detachment for me is this idea of respecting others enough to let them learn their own lessons. And that's tough sometimes. You know, it's tough when you see the train wreck coming. It seems like it. So, so I found out through my family members that I have a younger brother who's one of the reasons I qualify for Al-Anon, and who is not wealthy by any stretch of the imagination. And his significant other recently quit her job. You know, it's the hand-to-mouth kind of lifestyle. Who bought a $2,000 vacuum cleaner. Yeah, and I know about this because my father is upset about it. And I think and so here's the deal. I love my brother. I love him with my whole heart. And I don't know why he bought a $2,000 vacuum cleaner. They're in the process of ripping up the carpet in the house and putting down laminate. I don't know. But you know what? That's his lesson to learn. I have a $150 vacuum cleaner I never use. I'm just wondering, if I had a $2,000 vacuum cleaner, would I use it? That might be good, you know? I don't know. It matters not. You know, what matters is that I love my brother. That's what matters. I don't care what he does. I mean, I hope he doesn't hurt himself with this vacuum cleaner. It's apparently, it's amazing. I need to respect him enough to let him learn his own lessons. You know, and the MO in my family is he's the screw up. I'm the star, he's the screw up. So whatever he does is always suspect, his decisions, you know, kind of thing. I don't want to play that game. I don't want to play that game anymore. And part of the maybe part of detachment for me is step one. You know, I want to accept my brother as who he is. I want to love and accept him as he is. There's a member of my home group who talks about radical self-acceptance. And I think just radical acceptance. And my definition of that is accepting you, accepting me, accepting the situation so completely, I don't need it to be different. I don't need it to be different. It's okay. It's okay to have a $2,000 vacuum cleaner. It's okay. You know, world's not going to stop spinning. It's okay. And that is something I have to practice for sure. That attachment and or detachment and acceptance. I think detachment helps me be in the present reality. When I start my prayers every morning, I ask my higher power to help me be in the present reality as it is, not as I want it to be and not as I fear it to be, but as it is. I have spent most of my life not in the present reality. I spent my childhood daydreaming. I'm a blackout daydreamer. Just saying, I'd come too. I wouldn't know what was going on, you know? So I have to work hard to be in reality. It's easy for me to slip out. It's easy for me to project into my fears. It's easy for me to just go to fantasy land. I prefer it to here a lot of the time. Not so much anymore. The more I connect with my higher power, the more I'm able to be in the present and really be in the present, you know, and really be in my life and have it be fun. Okay. The literature talked about, or what I got out of it was being able to forgive myself for my own disease. I am deeply affected by the family disease of alcoholism. You know, sometimes I make poor choices. I've never bought a $2,000 vacuum cleaner, but I have made some really crazy choices. I am drawn to the person in the room who's the hardest to love. I mean, that's just like what was my MO for the longest time. Fixer-uppers, you know? people with potential. None of that potential realized, but a lot of potential. And I just know that to be true. You know, that's been the case. I am, since I've been in Al-Anon and really work in the Al-Anon program, I'm married to a man today who has decades of recovery in both programs. I mean, it's a huge gift. We have recovery in our relationship. We use the traditions in our relationship. We have regular group conscience meetings in our relationship. It's awesome. You know, it's really awesome. And I think just as the disease feeds the disease, so too recovery feeds recovery. And so I believe that our recovery feeds, you know, we are able to feed each other. We have bad moments, of course, you know, but hopefully not both of us at the same time. And that's what's helpful. But I will say to you that when we got married, I had that little detachment pamphlet. Detachment is neither kind nor unkind. And I read it all the time because it was hard to be in a relationship with someone who was also in the relationship. I was just, really. To be people who are checked out, you know? I'm used to being the one who's just making up all the dialogue and figuring everything out and blah, blah, blah. And now I have somebody who's, like, with me, and it was hard. I had to really practice my program. I'm not making it up. Okay, quick story. My husband drinks tea and coffee a lot, and he would leave his teaspoon face up, and there'd be a little stain at the bottom. And I tried cleaning the spoon, and it was really hard. And I'm thinking, I'm going to get arthritis in my thumbs. I won't be able to work. I'll be unemployed, living under a bridge from this teaspoon. That's where I went with it. And I called my sponsor and talked to her. This was like a week-long process. And me, and, you know, and she said, why don't you talk to him about this? I couldn't do that. I had to, because I was too wound up. And finally, we had a little group conscience meeting, and I said, I'm having trouble with this teaspoon. It's stained. And, like, first of all, he's like, it's not your teaspoon. Yeah. That's what happens when you live with someone else who works the Al-Anon program. But he also agreed to put the teaspoon face down. That was it. Yeah, we're done. That was it. That was a week of me. It was a 30-second conversation. So I do need to forgive myself for my own disease and need to forgive others. I have a family member who is challenging for me. She is not, she's a member of Al-Anon, and she does not qualify for AA. But, you know, the family disease manifests in all of us, I believe. And I was thinking about this as I was reading about detachment and so forth, that part of what's hard for me is the inconsistency. Loving, kind, angry. I don't know. I don't know when the other shoe's going to drop with this particular person. And she's a member of my family. And I want to have a relationship with her. So I don't know. So I never keep track of these things. But some time ago, I came up with, when I was doing my prayers, I came up with praying to love her as I believe my higher power loves her. Generously, without judgment, to really try to love her that way. Now, when I first started saying that prayer, yeah, I didn't really... I wasn't feeling it. But I've been repeating it for a long time. And I am now able to feel that with her almost all of the time. I still get scared when she gets angry. She's going through a hard time. And so sometimes her disease comes out as angry. It comes out as angry as in world politics kind of level. But it's still hard for me to be around anyone who's angry for whatever reason. So I call my sponsor before I go to visit, and I call my sponsor when I come back from visiting. And more now when I'm calling my sponsor afterwards, I'm saying, I had a great visit. It was great. I was just able to observe. I did not pick up the rope. I did not get in the tussle. And I personally believe that that prayer is what is serving me well. That's what I believe. I love our literature talks about acknowledging our common humanity. One of my prayers I use, and I think of it in terms of Tradition 5, actually. So Tradition 5 talks about offering comfort, encouraging the alcoholic, blah, blah, blah. How the heck do you do that? I think I do that by recognizing that everyone else I meet is a representation of my higher power in physical form. When I put it on that level, then it's like, oh, okay. And sometimes my higher power shows up in a really annoying person who talks on and on at the meetings, who gives me an opportunity to practice patience and compassion, you know? And then, and inevitably, when I'm having that kind of response, they'll be finished talking and be like, oh, thank God. And someone will say, that was exactly what I needed to hear. That was wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And I think, Sue, shows you what I know. But trying to acknowledge the common humanity. And you know, part of that detachment, love, forgiveness, all bound up in that is if I can forgive you your disease, forgive me my disease, and see the beauty in all of, you know, see the, what there is to love. I mean, see the potential that we all have. But really, then I can get to that place of real compassion, real love and acceptance. And in that place, I feel so connected to my higher power. I mean, really. And I feel like I'm able to just be generous and easy with the people in my life, you know? I think a lot of it is not taking things personally. So when my loved one is, any loved one in my family is having a bad day, I don't have to take that personally. It is not about me. It is not about me. They're not being angry or frustrated or whatever at me. They're having their own story. You know, they're having their own experience. So that's part of what I try to work on. I think I heard an Al-Anon speaker who I love once say, he was talking about being at a family event in the drama. And he said, maybe I can be the one person in the room who stays connected to God. And I think about that a lot. My father has terminal cancer, and I've been trying to visit him on a regular basis. And sometimes it's hard. It's hard to hear him talk about his casket he's picked out and his pallbearers, and it's hard. And I just try to stay connected to my higher power. That's my job. My job is to be present and try to be in good spiritual condition so I can be present and be with him as much as I can. That's my job. And not to have an opinion about anything. The more I detach, the easier it is to love and forgive myself and others, I feel. The disease tells me that love is this, you know, right in there, right in there. But the reality is, what the literature tells me is, that is not love. You know, pity is not love. Anxiety is, you know, fear-based, thinking that you have to love me or I'm not lovable, like, that is not actually love. Detachment is love. Detachment is mature. It's being recognizing that I'm a separate person from you and letting you be who you are, exactly as you are. Do whatever you need to do. It's okay, you know? So the more I detach, the easier it is to practice love and forgiveness, I believe. And the more I practice love and forgiveness, the easier it is to detach. I mean, they really sort of all go hand in hand in my experience. So I'm grateful that I've had an opportunity to be, that I have an opportunity to be here and that I've had a chance to share part of myself with you all. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Larry, for sharing. And our third speaker is Carolyn.
Wow, good morning. Or I guess it's afternoon now. I am delighted to be here. My name is Carolyn. I'm a member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon and Al-Ateen, and it's my pleasure to be here. I do want to thank AA for having Al-Anon here. For if they hadn't have been there for my husband, Al-Anon wouldn't have been here, and it wouldn't have been here for me. And I was really privileged at the beginning to go to AA meetings with my husband. He asked me to go along with him, even though we fought along the way there, and he made sure that all the women had coffee, you know, and I sort of got left in the corner. But it's so wonderful that we can do this thing together. am going to do, since you've already heard wonderful things, Carol said things that just really hit home for me, and so did Lyra. It was like, how can I follow that? You're going to hear it one more time. So I've sort of made up a little parody thing, and y'all have a soft touch for laughter, and I'm glad, because I hope you can laugh through this one too. One of the ways I got ready to come to do this was to listen to an AA speaker's tape. And you know how they talk real easy about the wreckage of the past. And it was like, yeah, and they laugh. They talk about the wreckage of the past, and everybody laughs like crazy. Well, from the other side of the coin, that wreckage can sort of be described as like living with an elephant. You know that elephant in the front room that we all have? And elephants do what elephants do. There's a wonderful page in our Courage to Change that talks about pigeons. And you can sit under the tree. I hear, see a lot of head nodding. And you can sit of the offended material, or you can move. And I thought, well, whoever wrote that page didn't live with an elephant. I think you can tell an Al-Anon because we spend all our life cleaning up what elephants do. And we can package it, and we can pass it on, and we can keep, you know, put it in the corners in the mind and keep it forever and ever and ever. And I think that's called a resentment. So when I got into Al-Anon, I really didn't know that I was living with an elephant. I thought we just needed to grow up. And thank God his work brought him to AA, got him to AA. And so when y'all said that I had to detach, I didn't know what I was supposed to detach from. And it wasn't too much longer that I noticed that I was waiting on him to brush my teeth. So I just, you know, in the regular go to bed, because it was like he had to come home and vent from everything at work, and I was the sounding board, and it was my job to keep him happy. So I had to listen to all that was going on, and then, but we did things on his terms, how we did it and when we did it. And I didn't even know that I was doing it that way. So I do have rose-colored glasses. And I had to find out first, before we did the detachment thing, how attached I was. And I heard in the meetings that some, you know, if you get married real young, you take your umbilical cord out of your family and you just plug it into another one. And I think that's what I did. So I really didn't wake up and even know what was happening until I got to Al-Anon. And then I heard y'all talking and then went home and looked at myself and then could see what I was doing. So one of my first sponsors kept saying, because I made everything wonderful, you know, I wouldn't look at the bad part. And she said, Carolyn, you're just like putting whipped cream on bullshit. And I was big on forgiveness, and I was big on saying I was sorry. Because I thought if I could say I was sorry enough, then things would get better, and he would be okay. And if once he is happy, you know, the little funny thing is that if you make Mama happy, everybody's happy. But in our family, if you make Daddy happy, everybody was happy. And there were good times, and there were bad times. And my focus over the years got more and more looking at the bad times and not remembering the good times. So I was real grateful for when he got into this program. He did stay sober, and I learned that when I started practicing detachment, it says in one of our literatures that when we first start, that there's a period of rebellion on the other side. And I think from in our family, because he was angry a lot of the times, when I started saying no and doing all these wonderful things that these ladies telling us, it was like waving a red flag in front of a bull. For everything that I wanted to change in me, there was a reaction on the other side. And so I really hung on to that just for today, where it said, just for today, I'll have a program. I may not work it exactly, but it'll be my program. And it'll be a little something to change. And do you know, I still do that today. And it doesn't even have to be directly related to Al-Anon. But the first thing that it did for me was when I found it was hard to change a habit, it gave me compassion that he was for him to stay in sober. Because I thought, once he stopped drinking, you know, we're going to have a wonderful life. And it didn't happen that way. He got angrier, and then as I started changing and all this rebellion stuff happened, and I could tell you story after story after story of the small little bitty steps that I took while I was cleaning up this elephant do, what do elephants do, to learn to accept that that's what he did and he wasn't doing it just to poop on me. So, but it got better, and I got better. And I started, the other good thing that happened at the beginning was I started writing inventories right from the beginning. And on a Mother's Day, we were arguing, and I thought, this is a day that was supposed to be for me. You know, this is Mother's Day. And he picked a fight over something or another, as usual. And I said, for the first time in my life, time out, I need to go talk to my sponsor. And I grabbed my inventory and went and left a bad situation. And it was like, wow, is this what detachment is? It works for me. So I said to her, I said, it seems to me like that this detachment thing is almost a pre-step one. And she said, no, it is step one. And so I had to realize, you know, that that I was part of the whole problem here and not just him. That just because he's sober and getting better, then there were some things for me to clean up too, because I was doing my own pooping. Then came along our four elephant children. Who were junior high and high school age, and they were all trying alcohol and drugs. And the one that, it was really interesting because I think their poop smelled different. I don't know what all they did, smoked, whatever, you know, but I learned I had to attach differently for each person. It was really interesting. I'm not a psychiatrist. I don't have any clue how or what or when, but it was all different. With my oldest daughter, I used the Al-Anon thing with God's hand and putting her in it. And it kept me from stepping, you know, I was able to step out of the room for a while to put her up there. And many years later, I kept doing that. And people told me that God has two hands to crawl in the other one. And that really, really helped. It double ramped up the detachment that I could leave her here because I had my second step that said God was there for me to help change me. And that really helped. So things are getting a little better, thimbleful by thimbleful. One of the daughters went to Alateen. And I always put in a plug for Alateen because it really made a difference in her life and mine. But a funny about Alateen is so the kids would get into trouble. And a big thing between my husband and I was, well, if we punish them and they're put on restriction, can they still go to their Alateen meetings or not? Because if we do, we want them to, you know, to get something out of it. But that would break their, oh, you know how it goes. So I've often described my that life, that 10-year period or so in there, where they were all, we had a sober alcoholic, a mama going to Al-Anon, trying to change, and all these four kids were out doing their thing as a zoo. One would get in trouble, and then the other one would get in trouble, and then the other one, and, you know, it was just like crisis control all the time. So I didn't know how accurate and close to my story of elephants it was until, you know, till now when I'm putting it together that it really was a zoo. Now, the one that smelled the worst and left the most elephant do was the oldest son. And it was really hard because they were all adolescents while they were doing this. And you'd say, okay, well, it's easy to detach when a young adults or even older children. It's hard then, but it's really hard with adolescent. Where is my legal trustee duty? I'm into the new workbook. And when do you let go? And what do you do? Well, let me tell you, when they run away from home, you sort of don't have much power anyway, and you really do have to put them in God's hands. And we had this son that that I was obsessed over, as I was my husband, as I was over all of them. We had him in treatment at 13 and then again at 15. And the state sent him to their rehab somewhere in there. I can't even keep up with all the dates somewhere in there. And, you know, he would be fine for a while, and I would be happy while he was in there or in jail a couple of times, as adolescent jail. And when he'd come home, I would be so hopeful that we finally had a family of sobriety. You know, the older daughter's in AA, the dad's still going, I'm in Al-Anon, in Al-Anon, all of them. And about a week or two later, you know, I start seeing the signs. The red eyes, the whatever. And but I'm still shoving that poop around. I'm still packaging it up and getting a little detachment here and there and still taking everything my husband said personally. But I quit saying that I was sorry as much because that was not my name. And I was able to say no, as previously said. And we were in California at the time. The earthquake did not come and swallow me up. Nor was I Miss Al-Anon. Because you know, if you're Miss Al-Anon, you just missed Al-Anon. So at 18, this young man shot himself and died. That was in 1986. Crack had just gotten on the scene. And so it's been a long enough time that I can talk about it and know where I was then and where I am today. And this is the other part why I mention that is just because, whether they're drunk or whether they're sober, we still carry around what elephants do. You know, we still package it up and we still worry about it and we still try to clean it up. The wreckage of our past as well as the wreckage of everybody else's past. And I think that we're just God-given people that have given us here somewhere to learn how to love what elephants do. To love them right where they are and know that I can't change them. Couldn't change my kids, couldn't change my husband. And I left my paper, if you'll pass my paper on down. These children of ours, of no matter what age, we're seeing more and more parents in our rooms. I just happened to be here for a husband that learns with my kids, but we have this wonderful little bitty thing for parents. It's just come out, the parents of alcoholics. And the second paragraph on detachment is the key. I listened to one woman say that after many years in Al-Anon and many open AA meetings, she had never heard a speaker say, I was saved by my mama. I also have an Al-Anon sponsee that said, I can trust God with everything but my kids. And I don't know how to tell her how to do it. You just got to do it. And you learn all the little tools of what you do is keep the focus on me, do the best I can, clean up my own elephant do, and not get between them and their higher power. Because when I'm trying to help them, I'm between them. And, you know, if I'm being their higher power, then they can't get to God. When I'm fixing them, buying them cars, taking them things that they need, they just have to cry a little bit and I'm right there. No. I want to fix my daughter so bad. She's been sober for all these years. And I can't. That's for the rooms of AA to do and her husband and her children. I've got a few grandchildren elephants running around. And I try to watch them like a movie. I can love them where they are and see where they are. So, detachment, love. Love for me is like looking at that elephant and loving them right where they are. The son that died, so this was way back then, before he died, he was so angry one day, and he broke the mirror in our bathroom, you know, that goes all the way across the wall. And it was one of the first times that I looked at him and loved him and didn't have to fix him. And it was the most freeing, wonderful kind of love that I never thought that I would be able to have. And I have a problem with F words. So first of all, I'm trying to put the fun in dysfunctional. But when we got this thing with detachment, love, and forgiveness, I changed it to detachment, love, and freedom. Because this is what I found, that forgive, it's really more, it's, let me start over. When I was first in Al-Anon, in our one day at a time, it says, if I need to forgive, I'm judging somebody, and I shouldn't judge them in the first place. And so, to take out the judge, it's not a matter of forgiveness, it's a matter of accepting them just like they are. And as long as when I accept them and accept me and know that God's there to help me change and do the best I can be today, there's a freedom and a happiness that is beyond anything that I ever dreamed of. And even before my son died, I remember I have a journal, and about a year before he died, I had written in there, I'm as happy as can be. So you can be happy whether they're drinking or not, just like our closing says. You can be happy whether they're angry or not. And you can, no matter whether they're dead or not, it's still, I can be happy. And I can love them right where they are. And this is, so that's that part. Now, what I do today is when I go to the adult children of meetings of Al-Anon, I'll hear something that a mother has done to her children while the dad was drinking, and they're so mad at their mom, and it'll just ring my chimes. And because all my children were raised in the with program language, now they're in their 40s and 50s, I can go to them and share what I heard, and we'll talk about it. Reason things out and let there be no gossip or whatever it is. You know what it is. And it's the healing has healed our family from the inside up. And because I have done that with them, they've been able to come and tell me things that bothered them as kids and as an adult. And so we have a healing today that is just way beyond my wildest dreams. Now, freedom and all this stuff does not make us perfect. The most interesting thing to me is because we've done all this and I am where I am today, I'm actually free to be angry, to be happy, to be sad, I'll go through depression if I need to go through depression. And it's okay because I know this too will pass and that I have a program and a higher power. And what I ask my God to help me with every day when I start is today is the first day of the rest of my life. And I'm just having a blast. And I'm just so happy to be here. And I don't know how long I talk, but this is it.